I think the human mind is even more complex than that. You know, through a particular session, for me, a swim session, what motivates me to get in and start swimming up and down slowly in the start, in a warm-up, that motivation has to become very different 20 minutes later when you start a hard set and you're really pushing your body to go pretty much as, you know, as hard as you can. That takes a certain different type of motivation. Sleep has always been really important to me. You know, whatever figure we put on it, 90% of our ability to recover and be at our best the next day. A lot of my training is easy, low level, and I'm looking to make sure I'm keeping it really easy.
Alistair, good to see you. I wanted to go through at the beginning, speak about your early days and see how you got started. I can read through some of the notes in reading that you started at 8 years old. Is this correct?
Yeah, it's so long ago, I don't think anyone quite knows how I started or when I started now, but yeah, my mum was a keen swimmer growing up, and my dad had been a runner and just very active. And my mum at some point decided to help us, get us to join the local swimming club, which was called Aero Swimming Club. I remember really wanting to join the swimming club because she had won these medals, and I was kind of obsessed with this bag of medals she had and wanted to win my own. So I got told I could win medals like those at the swimming club, I think, by some friends. And so joined, and my dad had been a runner, and I really got into running at my local school, primary school. And actually that was earlier than that, I think probably 6 or 7 years old, and did my first triathlon as an 8 or 9 year old, I think, just because it was another thing to do. My parents were fantastic though. Really, I think they must have decided at some point it was important to expose us to as many different sports and actual arts and school and academics as possible. And so we were trying all kinds of sports, and triathlon was one of those, and it just caught my imagination.
Why triathlon though?
Well, I don't really know now, because I was kind of 8 years old at the time. But yeah, the triathlon didn't take over my life right from the start. You know, it wasn't, as an 8 year old, I did that first triathlon and thought, this is what I want to do. I want to be a professional athlete. It definitely didn't work like that at all, to be honest. I would do a triathlon one weekend and a running race the next weekend, and then a swimming race the next weekend. And so I was doing a combination of loads of different stuff, which was really awesome. And then I guess through my early teens and then later teens, I became much more specialized around triathlon and running. Right through my teens, I was running and running competitively. Swimming became less competitive at that, but doing a lot of running on its own, especially cross country and mountain running, and then really focused, and then triathlon through the summer. And then I guess by the time I was 18, I was probably putting all my energies into triathlon.
Mm. Have you realized at the time that you were about to be the best? Like, was there a moment that you said, oh, I'm really good at this?
No, not really. I guess to start off, I wasn't actually, definitely not the best or particularly good at it. I gradually got better through my teens, you know, kind of moved up the ranks, both in running and triathlon. And I went to the Junior World Championships as a 17-year-old. I'm quite young in the under 20 age group, and I think came about 50th. And that was in Japan. And I came back from that, and my coach said, you know, you can never go that far away to be so rubbish in an event ever again. And I kind of realized, to me, it'd been about trying to get there, qualifying to race for Great Britain, and that being kind of the end of it. And really, I should be focusing on trying to win and be the best I could be. And something actually clicked at me in my head that year as a kind of 17-year-old. And I actually went back the year after as an 18-year-old. And won the World Junior Championships. And at that point, I was thinking, wow, you know, yeah, I guess I am good at it, but this is also something I can do as a career, maybe.
Were you serious in your training back then, or did you start afterwards being more serious?
I was pretty serious in my training. I mean, yeah, I had coaching and I had advice, but to be honest, I was really developing ways of training on my own. I was really learning how much physical activity I could do in a week, working out where I could fit in extra training sessions around school time. And so a normal day could look something like ride for an hour in the morning on the way to school. And then I'd run in my lunch hour, which could be an hour run or a bit longer, swim after school for 2 hours between 4:30 and 6:30. And then sometimes ride home after that as well. So I was really kind of mixing training up, doing different things on different days and just experimenting really. And yeah, I'd go to the pool and have a coach set by a swim coach, and go to the track and have sessions set by my run coach, who became a long time coach, Malcolm. But yeah, a lot of that was kind of experimentation and me working out how I could train.
So was it that you were training when you're 17 and 18 years old, about 4 to 5 hours a day?
Yeah, possibly. And then sometimes weekends, I was probably doing relatively long, steady stuff as well, going out with friends on bike rides and that kind of thing. I'd say on the whole, it was very unstructured, but it had kind of a good overarching structure. So a lot of volume. And yeah, I remember kind of quite early on, my dad, who is a doctor, bought me a sports physiology book. And so I was kind of obsessed with physiology, human physiology and sport. And I remember, you know, being kind of constantly told by the triathlon coaching world, the coaches, if I was going on camps and national camps, that it was about triathlon performance, was really about your capacity, your VO2 max, and how quickly I could swim over 400 meters and run over about a mile distance, and just feeling that was wrong. That actually, for me, triathlon, an endurance sport that's an hour 45 long, was effectively an exercise in aerobic efficiency. And it doesn't matter how fast you can run a mile, it's how fast you can run at the end of that hour 45 race. And that was my kind of feeling. And so actually a lot of my training became based around that, you know, how can I get as aerobically as efficient as possible? And so, yeah, a vast majority of really low level aerobic training with some more high intensity. So it did become really quite polarized quite early on as well.
Yeah, I read somewhere that you mentioned about polarized training and avoiding moderate intensity zones. What was that the case?
Kind of, again, you know, this is a process of iteration over years where I'm growing up, learning a bit more about the science, learning actually a lot from the people around me, you know, running with some of the best runners around and guys, actually, they won't call themselves coaches, but teachers at school who had done that job for 40 years and probably know more than, you know, anyone about what it takes to help young lads run fast. And so, yeah, I think I learned that, you know, and I'd want to do sessions. I'd want to be able to go to the track on a Tuesday night and do a really good session. And I'd want to go to the pool and do a good swim session. And I learned, I think, that if I was doing the other training in between, you know, my bike rides to school, which were a commute, if I did that a little bit hard, that meant I couldn't do the hard stuff very hard, and that would hold me back. So it was a lesson I learned through that kind of process, I think.
So it was a lot of trial and error in these days. What about sleep, maybe? Have you been sleeping well early? Did you notice the effects of sleep early on, or did you discover this afterwards?
No, sleep has always been really important to me. I kind of knew it from early on. And yeah, since, you know, obviously, I guess digging a bit deeper into the actual evidence around it. But yeah, I've always had this kind of anecdotal gut feeling that sleep is, you know, whatever figure we put on it, 90% of our ability to recover and be at our best the next day. And almost everything else, you know, makes up that 10% or whatever. And the majority of that is nutrition, to be honest. So doesn't leave a lot of room for other stuff. But yeah, sleep, super important. Again, I think my coach, Malcolm, used to say, I think an hour before midnight is worth two after midnight. So I don't know if he had a particular reason for saying that or just trying to get young men in bed earlier. But Yeah, so that kind of always stuck with me a little bit as well. And of course, I think when you're on a routine of training early, I've not done a lot of early training in my time, but, you know, years and years of training at seven, so having to be up, I guess, just after six, you quickly learn that you need to go to bed early, and you're also tired. You know, you're tired a lot of the time, and that, I guess, that makes you want to sleep.
Mm-hmm. And when it comes to nutrition, can you recall how did your nutrition evolve from the very early days to today? How did it change, and how were you preparing?
Yeah, so I guess there's a few different periods. When I was at home, up till kind of, I guess I was 20, I was eating with the family, and I would sit down and have meals. I would get up, have breakfast in the morning, go to school or go to university, have something at lunch, and eat then in the evening as part of a family. I don't think it was, you know, super health and sport conscious, but it definitely wasn't bad. It was just a really good rounded diet, which I think very much has informed my thinking for the rest of my life. Probably moving into my 20s, I remember thinking I could probably eat absolutely anything. It really didn't affect me. And that's maybe the benefit of being a young man. You know, probably when I was at my best of my athlete career, I really wasn't giving nutrition an awful lot of thought, to be very honest. And I kind of always separated nutrition between everyday, daily life nutrition and performance nutrition. And yeah, I mean, performance nutrition, I was a lot more conscious about. I was in racing, I was making sure, obviously, triathlon's about an hour 45 long. You've got an hour window on the bike to get in however much you want to get 80 plus grams of carbs, plus the salt you need and the water you need for the race. Harder to get that when you're trying to run really hard. So I was very conscious of that, but my everyday nutrition I was much less conscious of. Apart from after every single hard running session, my coach would bring a pint of milk for us to drink. That, you know, the pint of milk, obviously the theory being the calcium and the protein in there is important for recovery and bones and reducing the risk of injury, and it being as close to the finish of the session as possible for those metabolic and anabolic reasons. So yeah, that was a definite steering point. But yeah, outside that, less so. Definitely as I've got older, I've become much more conscious. I have to watch what I eat on a number of different ways. I think I noticed that I'm much more sensitive with carbohydrates, for example. So, you know, definitely I would never, ever have thought, oh, I have to be careful of not to eat a whole bar of chocolate. That might make me feel funny or lead to a lull afterwards. So thought of that. And I just generally eat a much more kind of healthy, all-round balanced diet, just for kind of health reasons as well as performance reasons. And I think that coincides obviously with concentrating a bit more on long distance, and as getting older, one, but also like long distance triathlon, you know, you're metabolically you're not racing for an hour 45 anymore, which really you can do not worry about that much with exogenous carbs. And as like I said earlier, as long as you've got a really good physiological aerobic base, you're going to get most of the way through with the endogenous carbs when you need them. But for long distance stuff, I think that nutrition element, both in race and out of race, becomes a lot more important.
Mm. Can we make this a bit more specific? So if we say, for example, that if you had to compete in 1 month, What would your diet consist? Would you measure your calories and then have specific timings for carbohydrates and surround your workouts, for example, with carbs? And what was the process?
No, I don't have a really specific diet. I do work with a nutritionist, and he comes away on camps with me and does cook with me and support me sometimes, which is awesome. But he wouldn't measure the calories. No, I don't particularly have a really structured diet. So I guess a normal day, I eat three meals, depending on a bit on what I'm doing during the day. I normally swim in the morning and get up and actually don't eat before swimming, even if it's a hard or an easy session. I actually just never have. There's no particular reason for that. But come home, normally a breakfast is a bowl of porridge with fruit and peanut butter and tea, drink lots of tea. Then the second session of the day, some point, a long ride or run or whatever that might be, with lunch, and then dinner in the evening, which is normally protein source, most of the time meat, some veg, and I guess a carb source that's potatoes or whatever. I do some specific training sessions. So yeah, I mean, so I guess this is the link between everyday and performance nutrition, as I defined it before. But I think, firstly, if you're going to race over an Ironman distance for 8 hours, you've got to be pretty adapted to your nutrition. Gastrin, you know, so it's fine on your stomach, so you're not going to have problems there. So you're used to it, but also to make sure your ability to metabolize it is as good as possible. And actually, I've done quite a bit of testing with different combinations of carbs and various stuff to see what combinations I metabolize best and how much I can metabolize.
How can you tell? How can you test carbohydrates, for example, the different sources? Which ones are good for you?
I did a type of testing where I did a number of different tests, all following the same protocol with, I guess, race pace, bike, and run over a period of a couple of hours. For each of those, we tried out different combinations of carbohydrates. I can't remember exactly what they were, but you know, you could have a standard 80-20 maltodextrin fructose mix, and slightly different mixes, as you can imagine, on different, slightly different ways of delivery. And then through the expired air analysis and blood analysis, we could work out how much I was metabolizing, obviously, with the ratio of the inspired and expired air, carbohydrate to fat, but also looking at how much of the energy requirement that I was needing was coming from carbohydrate breakdown, both endogenous and exogenous, and also coming from fat. So yeah, that was interesting, and since then use a fairly standard race drink. But yeah, and I also do a very little bit of training. I don't really push it out where I'm particularly trying to just push my ability to survive off low carbohydrates or metabolize fat a bit better. And by that, I'm not talking about a low carbohydrate diet. I just think there's good merits in, when you're doing aerobic training, for the easy stuff and up to around your kind of LT1, your ventilatory threshold, you know, if you, just the theory of being able to push that out a little bit to help your body be a little bit better at burning fat there if you can. And it makes sense, doesn't it, that you've got to do that without too much available carbohydrates.
Does protein play an important role, or is it a question of carbohydrates and fats?
Protein plays a really important role in my understanding, and kind of how I approach it in recovery, the most important role. And yeah, I mean, now when I come back from sessions, especially hard sessions, a protein shake to as quickly as I can after the session. Yeah, I think especially, again, being a bit older, that really focus on recovery nutrition has become very important.
If you had to, I wanted to do a hypothetical scenario for the athletes that are listening, for them to understand, if you had to compete, let's say, in 6 months or in 1 year, how would you go about it? And the time frame should be, when do you start optimizing for the competition? And let's do, for example, let's say in month 12, I'm going to be doing this and this and this. And then in month 6, I'm going to be doing these things. And then before the competition, I'm going to be doing that. Could we go through that?
Yeah, so I like to keep myself through most of the year in the position that I could go out. And so I'm at a good baseline. And that baseline means that in 2 months-ish, I could prepare to do a particular event, irrelevant of what distance it is or whatever. I do kind of caveat that. I do think it is important sometime in the time frame, whether that's, you know, once a year traditionally or slightly shorter or longer, to have some down period where you do get actually unfit. I know there's different circulations of what people think around this now, but I guess my unfit is probably still relatively active. So, you know, still right. It's not organized training, still doing a bit of training, but actually I am actually detraining. That's only anecdotal. I'm pretty sure that I feel a benefit from doing that. So say that kind of level. And I think the important thing about that level specifically to anyone that's listening is something that is, let's say, chronically maintainable around the rest of your life. So if that is 10 hours of exercise a week, and that's, I don't know, like 5 bike rides and 5 runs, and 2 of those are with your local club, so it's a bit harder, you know, that's your like chronic maintainable level. For me, that's more than that, but I think that's really important that you have that for loads of reasons. I think it's good for your body, you know, this whole stuff about health and injury, about the ratio of chronic to acute training load, I think is important. But general health, staying active, and it's so much easier doing stuff when you're in a routine. So having that routine of exercise, I think, is why I'd really recommend that. And then let's say you've got 2 months to prepare for an event. You know, it depends very much what it is. If, I guess, I kind of split it between shorter stuff and longer stuff. For me, that's kind of the middle distance and an Ironman distance. Middle distance, I'm going a bit harder. Obviously, it's a bit more of a focus on my ability to exercise quick. So a bit more where I'm kind of pushing the threshold workouts on the bike, pushing that on the run a little bit. Running quick is a bit more high risk, so I'm focusing on that. And for longer distance, so that's Ironman per se, a bit more focus on a few lower levels. I guess the people might define it as zone 2, but kind of top of zone 2 kind of training, just to get used to that pace and metabolizing at that level, and longer running. So I just train specifically around that. But yeah, I do think it's important having that base level is really important. And yeah, working back, I guess, to be a bit more specific about that, I don't go super specific in terms of, you know, trying to do the distance or anything like, you know, this crazy amount of distance to do or all of those things. But yeah, if I'm doing a long race, I'll spend some long rides on my bike to be comfortable in that position. I'll use those to test my equipment, so I'm not using anything for the first time on race day. I use those to test my nutrition so that I'm getting really comfortable with that nutrition, really confident it's not going to cause me any problems, and a lot of the technical things around that.
You had a very long career. You have been very consistent, always winning. And I think that's a very, very difficult part because many athletes go to the peak of their careers and then they have a lot of injuries, for example, or they lose their motivation and so on. What would you say was the key for you to be able to go through all that in so many years?
Well, yeah, I do feel like I've had a long career. It's definitely not been as consistent as I would have liked, for sure, and definitely had trouble with injuries. But yeah, I think the most important thing is you've got the will to do it, to be honest. And so it is that mental, when I get up tomorrow morning, is it what I want to get up and do and go training? And there's loads of things that go into that, you know, your mindset, making it easy for you, removing those barriers, having great places to train, great people to train with, all those things. So yeah, I do think that's the main thing, having that will and love of it. And you can create that environment around you. So creating that environment around you, so you do have that love of it to make it easy, I think is really important.
I say that's very important. Can we go into a bit more specifics when it comes to mindset? How and also having the right mindset for so many years, again, it's very, very difficult. So what do you do?
To an extent, it is something that I've either always had, so it's hard to say how it could be different, or it's just kind of inbuilt in me, either through nature or nurture. I don't know, because obviously I've got a brother that does it as well. So who knows? Yep. But yeah, it is there. So I think there is that inbuilt love of doing stuff. You know, I've done some of the biggest races in my career and thought, oh, I'm going to have a rest after that. And then, you know, literally the week after, being back in the pool, and within 10 minutes, I'm swimming as hard as I can because it is just what I love doing. But also, yeah, I think this kind of concept of making it as easy as possible for yourself, I think, is really important. So yeah, I always, for a long time in where I've lived, I've made sure that my kit is all accessible. You know, if I want to go and go for a bike ride now, my shoes are on a rack. You know, I can put on shorts and a top, and I've got a bike that's working. I can jump straight on it. And that might seem like a really basic thing, but if you're sat here now and you're deciding whether or not to go out cycling, these are the kind of barriers that can get in the way of going. Other things like that, having good people to train with, you know, on the days. So you know that you're going to go and meet your mate for a run tonight at 6, so you're not going to let him down. And that's an important part of that. Nice places to train, you know, live somewhere where it's easy to be active. Yeah, I think these are all kind of, for me, it's been all about taking down those. What can I do to remove the barriers to me going out and doing what I need to do today? And yeah, I actually wrote a book, and a large part of it was on this subject not that long ago. I actually had the pleasure of interviewing loads of other, mostly sports people, who, you know, really are some of the most consistent long-term sports people you can imagine over long periods of time. And when you ask a lot of these guys this question, I kind of realized that what they were all really good at was drawing on the right type of motivation when they needed to, on that specific today, to do what they needed to do. So yeah, for sure, that might be, I've got an event in 2 weeks' time, I need to go out the door and do this today. But other times that might be, yeah, I want to go out today because, I don't know, I'm going to treat myself when I get back. Other days it might be just, this is because this is just what I do. And actually, I think the human mind is even more complex than that. You know, through a particular session, for me, a swim session, what motivates me to get in and start swimming up and down slowly in the start, in a warm-up, that motivation has to become very different 20 minutes later when you start a hard set and you're really pushing your body to go pretty much as, you know, as hard as you can. That takes a certain different type of motivation.
I wrote all these things down, but it's super interesting, removing basically all the barriers from your life to make it very, very easy to actually go and do it. And then having good people around and having really nice environments, that's very, very interesting. What about wearables? Are you using any technology to help you with training? Are you using any power meters, heart rate monitors?
So, I use Quark power meters and Wahoo watches and bike computers. For actually kind of, I guess, all kinds of reasons, actually. When you're doing hard sessions, I'm using it as a guide to how hard I should be pushing as a pacing thing. If I'm using, actually lots of time, like I said earlier, a lot of my training is easy, low level, and I'm looking to make sure I'm keeping it really easy and use it the opposite. I, for a lot of my sessions, unless it's a specific session, I don't actually use heart rate along with that, although I do sometimes if I'm looking into some specific stuff. And yeah, over doing specific things, I do use some other sensors sometimes, like core body temperature sensor and various other things. Yeah, and have mapped everything over the years.
I was a few years ago, I was in the city of Leeds, and there was an event below my house, and I was looking at people running. And I went downstairs to actually see the event and all that. And I saw you running, and every time you were running, everybody from the crowd were shouting, everybody was celebrating. That was super crazy. So the crowd there was very, very supportive. I think it was because you come from there as well, and you studied in the area too and all that, but it was super, it was really nice to see that. What did you do in Leeds? What did you study?
So I started studying medicine at the start of my university career when I left school. And then I realized that I wanted to take my triathlon seriously, and that wasn't going to happen while I was studying medicine. So then I moved back to Leeds and studied sports science and physiology at Leeds University, which I know you attended too. And yeah, it was really good. And very quickly, that kind of the university were amazingly supportive, and it ran along with my career. You know, I was at that point going to my first Olympic Games in 2008 and traveling around the world, ultimately winning the world championship in 2009. And I did that while studying full time there. Yeah, and doing some really cool, actually, studies into all kinds of stuff, heat and pre-cooling and ankle biomechanics and oxygen kinetics. And so a really good kind of base of stuff that I love trying to understand as well.
Last topic I think to discuss is entrepreneurship. I believe you have been doing some investments. You have Brownlee Fitness. What have you been doing there?
Yeah, so I think from the investment side, for a while, I think some of my sponsorship deals were becoming types of investment, and it's something that I really enjoyed. I actually then, after that degree, went on to study a master's in finance, and it seemed like I could invest in the right early stage businesses, and it would kind of bring together all my interests. One which is sport, health and fitness. Another one which is trying to encourage and enable and help other people to be fit and active, because obviously sport's given me so much. And another one of those is helping people kind of achieve their goals, which I think quite often is founders trying to achieve their goals of creating an amazing business. At the same time, offering my kind of help, support, and doing that with some other people as well. So it's something I've really enjoyed. I've actually invested in all kinds of things over the last 10 years. Kind of been a bit broader more recently, but really I kind of define it as anything that is health, activity, health-based. So driving activity in people that's going to help them be healthier.
How do you make a judgment when it comes to entrepreneurs? What are you looking for?
So I don't have fixed criteria per se, although I probably could claim that I do. But very broadly, I like things that are obviously driving people to be active in some way. So, I mean, that's really broad. So it could be an app that is helping people. So talking about barriers, you know, taking down the barriers to help people be more active. So a social fitness app or a type of software that is bringing people together to be fit, for example. It could be hardware that is either motivational or informational, you know, I guess anything that is giving people advice on how they can be active. What else could it be? It could be clothing. And so kind of consumer retail, you know, one of the things has been a business that is trying to solve the problem of cycling in cold weather, for example. You know, that's again a barrier to activity. People who don't want to go out because it's too cold. So I guess that's my first pillar. What barriers are overcoming? Is that barrier removed going to help people be more active. So there's that. I like early stage things to kind of get involved. I like things that I can add value to personally, either, I guess, through information, advice, people I know, hopefully wisdom, sometimes a kind of from a promotional value. I like that. I like things that tend to have to be a bit more, to be a bit more investment wise, tend to have relatively kind of inherent IP, even though it doesn't have to be actual IP, but you know, you're developing something unique, you know, not to say that has to be like that to be a successful business, but it's just what I like. And things that, yeah, have a kind of big revenue potential, although not always actually. Yeah, I've invested in some things that I just think this is a brilliant business and could help 1,000 people's lives, not 1,000,000 people's lives.
And how do people usually find you when they seek an investment?
I guess all kinds of ways. I've been a very active investor in my area, so involved in various investment networks and get a lot through them. Now on LinkedIn, I see decks from businesses most days, which is fantastic. And yeah, I think I've been slowly formalizing this kind of investment activity into a business over the last few years. Over the years, I've kind of had a bunch of people that may invest alongside me. If I'm like, yeah, this is fantastic, why don't you invest alongside me? You know, we're bringing more capital to it there. I'm adding the value I can add. Someone else is adding the value they can add. And yeah, and I'm formalizing that slowly to be a network of people. And I think at some point that'll either be a more built out kind of angel network or a small, very specific fund.
That was exactly the question I was about to ask. It's if your goal is to create a fund one day.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Okay. I've definitely realized over the last few years there's a lot of people who are really interested in investing in this area for a lot of the reasons that I am said, you know, kind of semi-altruistic, but from a strong belief that a lot of these great businesses do have the capacity to change people's lives for the better. We are all going to need help. We've been more active at some point in our lives, even me. And so, you know, that help is going to have to exist in a plethora of different ways at different times for different people. And so, yeah, the only way to do that is private enterprise of clever entrepreneurs overcoming the barriers they face. I think, and also that, you know, more and more I'm realizing actually people don't want to be seeing a bunch of investments that I'm interested in. They just want to say, yep, here's some capital and here's the kind of thing I want to be involved in. But yeah, this is on the kind of strategy, the ideas that you have around investing in things that make people's lives better, with obviously the hope of producing a revenue for the future. Go away and put it together, which, yeah, is something that I'm working on.
Got it. Last question. In terms of the future, what should we expect? If we say 5 years or 10 years from today, would you be in the position that you have a fund, that you are running the fund, or are you building something to help more people become better athletes, or what are your plans?
So, yeah, I think in 5 years, I'll almost certainly be retired from professional sport. I see I've got kind of three really strands to what I want to do, I think. The first of those is the Brownie Foundation, which we drive to get young people into the sport of triathlon. We've gone past the barrier of having over 50,000 young people do their first ever triathlon with us, which is fantastic. And yeah, having more time to be able to drive that would be amazing. The second one of those is sports politics and kind of administration more, which is something that I'm just fascinated in because I couldn't believe more strongly in the importance of sport in all of our lives and especially the Olympic movement. So I'm really lucky to do some work with the IOC, the Olympic movement, as part of the IOC Commission, Athletes Commission. And I love that. Again, that, you know, I couldn't believe more strongly the importance of the Olympic movement in our lives. And the third one is the investment piece around sport tech and enabling more people to be active. And yeah, I'd like to move that towards the fund structure, as I discussed, and building something around that, yeah, a real enabler of great entrepreneurs to get the support they need to build the solutions to problems.
Excellent. Alistair, thank you so much for the chat.
Thank you. Thank you very much.